Save your pity for the cast!
Fortified Niche.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Fortified Niche, your podcast covering small indie war games. I'm your host, JC Dent, joined by the host, Kassa. Hello.
Hello, host friend. How are you?
Oh, you know, just finished Lamplighters League this weekend, so I got to mention Pulp Alley in a review of a video game. So, so that's nice. How about you?
Back to playing Pathfinder 2nd Edition. Some one-shots. Adventure things. Played Investigator. Investigators suck. Basically, an archetype spread out to a full class with no extra abilities. So it's like, all right, my turn is doing these three things to try and shoot you once, and then I'm using a gun, so I do basic damage. This blows.
So it's recreating the 5e martial experience in Pathfinder. Nice.
Almost. It's weird because, like, I wish they did the Warhammer Fantasy thing of just like, here is a weapon. And you can just like add tags to it. Like you have a simple weapon or a simple heavy or light or whatever, martial, melee, medium. And instead it's like, no, there is a good weapon in each tier that you can afford, like common, uncommon, rare, whatever. And you get access to it. Like, and you just want to take this. You always want to take the gnomish flick mace because it has reach and trip and all this shit. And it's like, I want something else. Well, don't take something else because it's the good one. And it's the one you want to take.
Something else is suboptimal. How dare you think about using something else?
I mean, you can be suboptimal, but like every enemy is going to be played like an optimal psychopath murder machine, and you're going to suffer for it. So.
Yeah.
Maybe well, not at your table, but that's my table's experience. Every fight is an extremely hard fight versus enemies above your level. And it's like, oh, okay.
Well, it's hard for the GM to do it because challenge ratings have never meant anything in any Dungeons and Dragons or adjacent game.
Much like 4th edition, where it's everything's sort of like they've thought about it, which is great. Yeah. Much like in Lancer, another game by Tom Bloom, which is an incredible fucking game that sold amazingly and has had another big published edition by Dark Horse put out. And this is his new game, which he put out, made in 2 weeks apparently, which is an insane turnaround.
Yep, we're talking about Magna Gothica Malagast 666. So anyone who's probably just gonna call it Malagast or Malagast.
Six.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a very heavy metal game and also a heavy metal chess game, but the backdrop of the game is that there is a city at the end of the world, at a hole that leads to hell, and in this city called
London,
Anzen Mezeron, or London for short, death is broken. So, like anyone who dies is reformed within 6 or 7 days. The city is sliding slowly to hell, but I guess like nobody cares too much, much like we do with climate change. And the game is about being a necromancer, collecting your bunch of weirdos and fighting somebody else's bunch of weirdos. Even if you lose, you're going to be reformed in like 7 days. So like that doesn't hurt too much. Doesn't sting too much. And that's basically the premise of the setting. It's covered in a little, but not too much more detail in the book itself. Most of the flavor you get is from Tom Bloom's, aka Abaddon's, awesome art. Like, you know what our guy can do from Kill 6 Billion Demons. So you know what he did here. Only it's most often black and white, maybe with a dash of red, or later in the faction section with a dash of the house primary color.
The art design is insanely strong. It looks so good.
Yeah,
It's such a pretty game. The art's so insanely evocative. It gives me that, like, Blanchian sort of vibe of, like, here is a picture, and this picture tells you so much about the world just immediately without, like, having to bog it down with, like, a bunch of text. Just sort of, like, here's a fucked up chapel, and here's every little fucked up little guy in the chapel as well. And it's like, oh, I get that. That makes perfect sense to me now. Rather than being like...
If you know Tom Bloom, you know that he is good at drawing weird guys and naming those weird guys. So, like, you have an infested gate guard, and you see a shriveled face covered in maggots, and you're like, yeah, I understand what's happening here. I'm immediately interested. and though it doesn't get expanded upon, it's like, hey, it's fodder for your imagination, so... go buck wild with it.
I honestly, it's like 8 pages of fluff, 9-10 pages of fluff, and then it's just sort of like, that's out of the way, here's how the game works, and the back of the book is sort of like some items to help you customize your dudes and make them look kind of cool. And I dig it because it's like those 10 pages just like really good fluff that really sets up everything, and then everything else is sort of tied into with like character designs and rules and specific setting diegetic reasons for the way the game works, rather than here's 90 pages of fluff, which is too much, and all the deep lore and all the explanations why everyone does everything and trying to work out setting plot hooks and stuff, where it's just like, nah man, you're gonna fight anyway, who gives a fuck why you're fighting, just do it, like the aliens invading, come on, just go for it. Like,
well, 90 pages of fluff is usually the issue with our RPGs, but this ain't one, chief.
I was thinking of some other games we covered where sort of the book we get to read and play with is only like a third of the rest of the book.
Sort of like, yeah.
Well, I didn't really want to pay for the rest of this, but I kind of have to, I guess, so.
Well, the Malagast rulebook lands it at... decent, someone would say nice 69 pages of PDF. I wouldn't be surprised if the page about adding miscellaneous stuff to your dudes was added to solely to reach that number.
Maybe.
Yeah, it goes through the setting nicely, and then you get into the rules, much like we're going to do, which are fairly simple. So Casa likened it to chess because it uses an 8x8 board. It's we're talking about
grid squares here.
Yeah, it's a grid. It's a game designed to be played on the digital tabletop, so you know, tabletop simulator and stuff. And it's even easier to do so because everything happens and is measured in grid squares. Movement is either forward, backward, left, right. There is no diagonal movement, but for attacks and other things, you can measure the range diagonally.
Yeah, units can move and then act. You can't ever act and then move unless you've got like abilities that you sort of like take steps. And
yeah.
Stuff. If you've played Lancer, you're sort of aware of how like the system works. You have lots of, everyone has that very simple thing of like, you can move up to your movement speed or move twice in a row if you prefer to spend your action making normal movement, or you can make the act action. And also like, just shout out to how fucking good the example imagery is, just to sort of immediately show you how it works in that like weird like Super Mario Brother kind of, it feels really like good video game manual sort of artwork.
Maybe he played that game, what was it called, Tunic or something, the one that has a manual you fill out and decipher as you go. Yeah. I don't know, people were raving about it recently. Maybe he played it. So, yeah, the rules are basically that simple. Because, like, you roll, if you need to test, you roll a d6, you need to roll a number or higher, and...
you have ways to get more dice and less dice, and you're generally picking the highest or lowest out of those numbers. You can, in fact, roll zero dice, which means roll two dice and take the worst dice.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you'd be rolling one or more, and then it's, you know, single d6s. Picking, that really changes.
picking out the best. It's when you attack an enemy, if that attack needs to roll a die, you need to roll over a number. That number is usually given by the enemy in question, and if you roll below a number, you simply score one damage.
Yeah, graze.
But if you roll, it's like a graze. So you're always damaging something, even if it's the biggest, toughest beast you've ever seen in a game. But if you want the full effect and or rolling the effect die for additional effects,
which is the hot new thing for this game,
you need to hit. And yeah. effects often come tiered, like, hey, if you roll 4+, you're gonna get this effect, and if you roll 5+, you're gonna get an additional effect in addition to the first one. And if you roll 6+, this could be another effect as well.
Yeah, some factions have, like, the effect dice is a 6, it's a headshot, and they do extra damage. And some, like, one faction has a unit where, like, you roll your hit dice and you roll your effect dice as well, which is a straight d6 roll. It has, like, on a 4+, get a strength token, on a 5+, get a move token, on a 6+, get a vitality token, which immediately becomes, like, absurd, because those all stack. There's a bit of writing fudginess we're not really sure of. There's one big typo on one of the examples, which is easy enough to work out, because the picture is very clear, and the text is like they've confused A, B, and C. Or they've confused A and C as A and B, which is not the end of the world. Like, everything else makes perfect sense. It's not sort of like you've forgotten that lower is bad in your game, and now your entire resolution system doesn't make any sense. It's more sort of like, this was made in 2 weeks. That's the biggest area you've got. Holy shit.
Yeah. The only real issue I had is, like, what does move as far as possible in a straight line mean? So, like,
I think everything means what it says, really. Like, looking for edge cases, like, we were sort of like, no, you just move as far as you can in a straight line.
I'm anxious to be
playing. We're cursed by other games. We're being taught wrong on purpose by other systems that think that clarity of language is, like, an affront to game design, as opposed to, like, no, you just do what you say, and that's much easier for the reader to learn. Defense is important.
There are two things that are bad for any sort of indie game. Any sort of balance and being clear in what you're saying.
I can't afford to be clear in what I'm saying. People might not understand things then.
Shit.
Yeah, people have traits and stuff. Like, it's... The rules are very simple. It's just roll d6 and then apply effect. That's great.
Yeah, the rules are simple. The tokens all give you either a bonus of 1+ or...
Ignore something. Like, vitality means you can ignore, like, damage. Strength means you get to do an extra point of damage. They also all have a antithesis. So, like, your strength has a weakness. Your vitality has a... harm type thing. There's like movement ones.
Something. Vulnerability.
Yeah. And everyone works on the same tags and the same writing, and it's just so clear in a way that we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
And it's just like, nah, man, here is like the one text box about curses. This is how all curses work. That it's like a weird effect with this tag. And if they have this tag, you can affect everyone. If they've got can't be cursed, then curses don't do shit to them. Stop trying it.
Yeah. It's literally called curse proof.
Yeah.
The thing about the tokens and stuff is that they don't act as passive modifiers. You have to expend them when you need them, and they are discarded. So, you know, you can't buff a unit to the stratosphere, though you can do some stuff. There's also armor in the game, but armor isn't that common. Like, some factions just go like, who cares? We actually like getting hurt.
Yeah, it's also only -1 damage, except you have super armor, then it's 0. And then it's works with everything, I think, is what super armor does.
I think super armor works like armor, but it just works against everything.
Yeah, because you have physical and magical armor, and they work versus those types of damage, and super just works versus everything.
But it's always just, you know, like one damage. So what armor does is nullify the graze. The graze damage, but it's not like, you know, you find a Terminator and he just ignores all damage outright all the time. Because even the most small units can have attacks that can deal more than a single point of damage. On the other hand, armor becomes increasingly useful against enemies that deal continuous damage, like especially when they maybe don't even have abilities, but can have abilities where they like deal one damage and then say on the effect dice roll of 4 deal another damage, and then on a 6+ another damage. So that's like three instances of damage. But since they're only one per, they would get eaten by armor every time.
If this seems complex the way we're explaining it, the game is way better at it. The game makes it much clearer.
The game is very clear. The basic rules are fairly simple, and then the additional sauce is usually delivered by faction rules. Factions might have their own special snowflake token, which isn't overly complicated. Usually has a fairly simple effect. Some of the units in that faction may also have a faction special rule, and then all the special rules that pertain to that faction are going to be listed out in front. So, like, if the faction has attacks that does obliterate, it will be mentioned. Or if the faction
Explain all the keywords faction uses. Amazing. Imagine doing that. Imagine just being like, this is what we like to do. This is the things we can do really well, and this is what we want you to be doing. So here's just sort of like, and also how it works. It's also like music suggestions for each group. I saw.
Yeah.
Not that bad.
Basically, theme music for every sort of like ganger and stuff.
Yeah.
Another thing with this game is that when you kill an enemy, they leave a corpse, which some factions can use and abuse to some certain fashion. And when one of your troopers die, you get a soul point, and soul point is what your necromancer uses to, you know, fart out magical effects. Your necromancer in here is as important as the warcaster is in War Machine, since if they die, your game ends. I don't think we managed to meaningfully imperil the necromancer in either of our...
Yeah, 10 HP and free human shielding is tough to get through. But if you start to die, you get soul points, and soul points power your necromancer's huge abilities, which are all very cool.
Yeah, and necromancers, well, we'll talk about more about that in the army building. There are a few scenarios in the book that they're... a lot of them can be solved by killing, but also you can still do the objectives. There aren't that many scenarios, which is maybe a shame, but it's a small game made in 2 weeks. I don't remember how much the rule set costs, and I actually bought it.
Depends. His Patreon has it. So whatever Patreon will be right, and I think it's like $6.66 was the GO price, because that's the joke.
Of course.
And there's 9 scenarios, or 10 scenarios. It's a bunch of different like variation stuff. Like most of them, the first three are just like fighting ones, and then treasure. But the actual haunts are kind of neat. They'll give you like specific map setups and stuff. The terrain works really simply. There's like elevations and walls, and it's all very clear how that works. There's no confusion as such. Yeah. Hazards exist, adverse terrain exists, or different walls are pretty cool. It's super neat, and it works so quick, and there's not really like much to the rules, and what there is to the rules is very specific and clear.
Yeah, so we can definitely move on to faction building. There are several, 6 maybe more factions in the game representing the great houses of necromancy in the city I'm not going to pronounce again. All of them have, all of them give you a necromancer you can customize to some extent. And then a bunch of nerds to choose from, which you can't really customize, except if you're playing games with a higher malice number than 0, then each unit type can be upgraded once at the highest level of malice twice. And the upgrade will apply to every unit of set type that you take, which you usually can't really spam, because there are limits to each class of type.
There are 6 classes of character, including the necromancer, and you can take infinite thralls, you can take like a tyrant, two hunters, two horrors. Like, everyone has access to, like, the same classes. I don't think anyone has a different type that no one else has.
I think some armies don't have certain classes. Like, at least one of them doesn't have a titan. But the classes are more of a designation of how the unit was designed, because they all act differently. They all do different things. But like, sure, there is one unifying feature in that the trolls can be taken one per slot and activated two at a time. But they are just the weakest guys. They're probably some of the easiest guys to kill out there. Though they can also be very dangerous, as we found out in our second game. And you can say they even serve different purposes, because Casa was playing the faction that doles out mutate tokens and consumes corpses on the field. And their troll is a horrible mesh of two guys, so when they die, it leaves two corpses.
The Guri is sick. There are seven classes, and each of them have access to six. Everyone has a unique identity. Everyone has, like, a specific way they work and play, and they all play the same way, but lots of them like to feed different mechanics. Like, your poison guys want to put poison out, my Igori wanted to put corpse tokens out, and then start eating those corpse tokens to power more abilities, which got bonkers. The hedgehog guy's just there to shoot you. For as few factions as they are, they all have such distinct identities. They all
look different, sound different, and work different.
It's incredibly cool to see such variety, and nothing felt unbalanced except for, like, my dice rolls. It's just, like, everyone is interesting. Like, everyone has, like, I like that guy. I think you can definitely find, like, your dudes in this really easily and really come with them.
For a game meant for the digital tabletop, people have already exported art from the book to make standees, and I've seen at least one goon started the green stuff sculpting the carcass soldiers. So that's nice. But yeah, as I said, army building is really easy. If you have five dude slots, you can take five dudes up to the class limit. The Titan is the only one limited to one, and he is a big dude. He takes up 2x2 spaces on the board. The rest are limited, usually to like two or three per. And the thralls are unlimited. And why would you want to take infinite thralls? Well, infinite thralls means a huge influx of magical points of soul. So that's one reason to go that way. And the way you build Necromancer is also up to you, because yes, they have their own set abilities governed by the faction, but you get to choose a single trait for them, which is it's a bonus trait that's a passive ability. You get to choose another act upgrade, which is another active ability that you can use alongside moving. That's usually like an attack. Yes, and you can also choose a single soul ability, which is a spell. And the spells you choose can be, like, fairly simple, fairly easy, from costing one soul, or can be something expensive, like six soul. For example, the Gore Grinder Necromancer, called the Warlord, they can take Devil Impact. It costs six soul. It deals six devil damage to an adjacent unit that basically vaporizes anything that's not a warlord, and then you deal six devil damage to yourself, which a necromancer can tank. They start with 10 HP. I think devil damage even goes through super armor.
Yeah.
So, and since you're playing gore grinders, that six devil damage might not even kill you if you have less HP, because the faction ability for gore grinders is that they at zero HP they gain one strength token and they don't die immediately. You have to
obliterate them again. The damage type you can do, it's very cool.
Yeah, you have to either obliterate it or find the or find one of those units that deal one damage, then one damage, then one damage, because that's how it works. You're not one-shotting with big chunky. You're not one-shotting a gore grinder with big super chunky mucho damage attack. You need several. So yeah, that's it. Army building is really simple, and like I mentioned, there's the malice level that you start with. It's recommended to play the first game without any malice, but then once you get malice points, you can spend it to upgrade a unit, choosing from one of three upgrades, and even at the highest malice level where you get 12 points and can spend 2 points on a single unit, you're not going to get all three upgrades.
Well, you can spend all your points on your necromancer, I'm pretty sure. Just have like a super necromancer.
I don't think necromancers have malice upgrades, and I don't remember if you can buy soul, act, or bonus traits for that.
Yeah, you can do it by spending dark powers increasing malice, but not traits. You only get one trait. So you get more act than soul, in theory, which are like your big super moves and stuff, which is, you know, it's neat. Like, everyone, I know, it's a cool game that doesn't require much in way of army building, because you want to have good synergies. You want to have like a lot of guys that can do things and the people that help you. I took one of each type each time I played and was like, oh, I probably needed more guys that just do damage rather than people that build a wombo combo that has no actual like damage output. As your guys chainsawed their way through my whole faction. I'm like, oh, this is going real bad. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, and the second game, I decided to go with Gore Grinders and just skipped out on their Freak, which is a class that is somewhat fragile but exists to boost your dudes. And I doubled up on Gore Grinder Thralls, and those guys are fast and fairly dangerous. And I upgraded them to be curse proof, so like Kasa couldn't curse them. I don't know if he even wanted to. But they did a lot of damage.
It also means they can't be helped by their own pain ghouls, which is an interesting anti-synergy.
Those guys are just designed to go right into the enemy line and get stuck in. It's easy. It's interesting. And I think Asa at some point said that it would be a perfect lunch break game.
Yeah, it's... Because it is essentially like a fancier version of a chessboard, and you know, putting post-it notes in your chess pieces, travel set chess, like it's so small and so simple and plays so well. Your only real risk is losing dice as you roll them, but don't roll them like my buddy James does. We just like yeet them across the room. Well, that's this is not great,
James. And the thing is, moving on, is that I don't think that it has any official miniatures yet. I'm sure somebody's going to cough up STLs at any point, but this is, at this point, you're either making standees out of the official art, or you're kitbashing something. This is like, this is very good for anyone who's excited by the Inquisitor 28 movement or Turnip 28, I guess, but wanted to be more metal and less turnipy. Any freaky, gross pinhead miniature you can find will fit there. If you've ever wanted to sculpt a skeleton that has trapped itself to a fiery wheel, this is the game for you. If you want guys that have flayed the flesh off their faces, Gore Grinders have two of those. So, you know, go freaky, go metal, go gothic. This is the game for you. And eventually, as long as you color them, as long as you add the one faction color they have, I'm sure everybody will be able to tell what you're playing.
And like, it being colorized makes it a lot easier. You make some little acrylic standees yourself or printable standees. It's just so much neat stuff. I've got a bunch of cubes I might use for my guys.
Actually, when I bought the rulebook, it comes with the digital assets you might want to use for your digital tabletop, so yeah. That's already nice. But again, we're going to say the same thing when that we said about Space Station Zero, is that these should be... the art in this book is so good that all the playing pieces should be made available to buy somewhere online. As,
well,
like,
he does,
you know,
include the, like you said, the miniatures. Standees. And these are included with the thing, which was our main issue with Space Station Zero. Didn't do that. It's just cool.
Yeah, but to, like, this one includes it. Yeah, it's great.
I understand 2 week process progress. Yeah, I understand a 2 week project doesn't necessarily have the time to sculpt.
Yeah,
awesome minis. And the community seems to have taken that up and be like, well, we want to support this. We think this would be cool. We can make this for everyone. So like that's pretty cool.
And even when it comes to standees, this game probably uses the least numbers of troops we've seen yet.
Yeah.
Although I guess Space Station Zero Space Marine crew would probably use fewer because it only uses 4. But yeah, even if you're going out of your way to make the fanciest standees known to man, you're printing the art out on like platinum wafers or some nonsense. If you somehow break your bank with this one, you're probably trying to do so. For internet points. And like Kasa mentioned, as Kasa mentioned, travel chess, it's literally scale agnostic. If you have an 8x8 board, whatever 8x8 board you have, and as long as it's not too small for you to physically move the playing pieces or to see what's happening on the board, you can play it, scale it to your liking.
Yeah, it's so much freedom in doing that. Like, it's super sick. So I'm just trying to Google 3D prints and stuff, and found some guys' cool fan art, and it's all so sick. It's like, ah. Yeah, no, minis, so scratch builders, modelers, casters, green stuff, savants, this is your medium, this is your moment, this is your time to shine.
So if you've always seen those guys who keep making art for Lancer mechs and stuff, this is something you can take up and make 3D models for this game, I guess. Moving breezily forward, I guess this is the compliment sandwich. I'll be a gracious host and let the other host start.
I mean, it's the art. The art alone is phenomenal. It's like any other game wishes it had art like this for the most part. Like, it's so much character. It's so much style. It's so much intentionality in all the designs. It's what you want. Like, this is what you want from a game. Even if it's not your kind of vibe, if you aren't in that sort of like black metal, gothic horror metal kind of vibe, sure. But also, you can't deny that it's good art. Like, it's just good. And there's such varieties to the art. Like, the example diagrams are all very clear, all very well done. The background art looks great. And every character looks like they would have that strong sense of design to them, that sort of like in TF2 style. Like, you look at our Thrall, and all the Thralls look like Thralls. You're not going to be like, oh, is that guy with the chainsaw your Thrall? No, he's fucking, you know.
He's a goddamn scion, and he's going to saw you in half. Giving a compliment to the art here, it's like the free bingo slot. Because, like, it's what you'd say if John Blanche was also a game creator at the same time and made a game that he illustrated. Like, yeah, the art is going to be good, and it is good. I really appreciated the fact how fast it played and how fast we got our head around it. Like I said, it hasn't always been the case, and especially with some of the recent games. And this was just a breeze.
Mm. Comes out just immediately like, oh, okay, I get it. Perfect sense.
Do you have a complaint to level at it?
I think single D6 resolution is kind of boring. There's no reliability in it, and everything is basically at the whims of the dice god. You're really encouraged to synergize and find ways to get more than one roll. But at the same time, most of the time, it's just a dice roll. Just 1d6 plus a d6 and...
Yeah, the whole graze damage thing mitigates this a little, but it's only a little because, like, there's nothing mitigating not having your effect to go off on the effect dice. For myself... it's more of a conceptual complaint, I guess, but I don't know how much longevity this game has. I don't know how long it would take you to get played out on it. On the other hand, I don't feel like this is a very strong complaint, because like, how many games do you generally play off some system? I don't know if I have like 10 games of Horus Heresy under my belt. Not the only game that I have appreciable play amount, but like I have an appreciable amount of Infinity experience. But other games, like, seriously, how many times do you play them? It's like,
I think it's a fair question to ask, like, what's the lifespan of this game going to be? What's the longevity look like? Does Tom have any plans to do like an expansion book? Will the community pick it up? There is an active Reddit going on, and obviously like it has that fan base of people who just come from Tom's stuff and love all that. So it immediately has like a bigger audience accessible to it than like most games. Like, people haven't heard of Pop Alley. People have heard of Kill Six Billion Demons and Lancer.
Yes.
And like, they play and enjoy both of them. So you can wedge that in as your entry point, which is a lot easier. Sort of like, it's a game about making his crew of spacemen and then going and playing through a meat grinder, or you make your favorite pulp heroes. But hear me out, it's not racist. Not as racist as you might think, but also, it's like, so like you have, yeah, like it's, you don't know, if it's a one and done, it's an amazing one and done, and it all exists. And it's all there for you to play without having to like worry about buying models that don't exist or aren't made anymore. We can get like old sheets and stuff though.
So what you're saying is I need to take someone hostage to make Tom Bloom cooperate with the Pulp Alley guy to do a crossover.
Yes.
But when you read the intro of the book, you get the impression that it has a hook for like campaign play about growing your necromancer and whatever. But I either it doesn't have any campaign rules, or I somehow managed to miss them. But like, again,
your malice game goes up really. That's
that's about it. But like, you would expect campaign rules, and you would expect for it to play with the fact that your necromancer is never truly dead, that they return in 7 days, and that I guess your goobers also return in 7 days. I don't know what the alive ability status of a warhead or a carcass thrall, gunwhite. Yeah, they're called gunwhites. So whether they count as alive for alive purposes, or whether it's just something that the necromancer is animating.
Yeah, like my counterpoint there is that, like, campaign rules routinely suck. Campaign rules routinely bad, with no point, purpose, or clear endpoint, or way to win, or diegetic or thematic rules that work for it. Like, oh, we're fighting today over who has the most food. But I'm soulless robots and you're a fungus, so none of us really need the food. So who cares? And just saying, like, okay, we'll play one malice today, then two malice tomorrow, or 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 is boring. But there's a lot more, I feel like, honesty to it. Like, this is a pickup game for you and your friends to play, like, over lunch break, or make cool models and go with that, rather than it is a forever game that you will play forever and ever and ever.
Forever games are mostly such because you have a miniature collection you'll never finish painting. That's what makes them forever. And we managed to make a lot of hay out of this complaint that I felt was fairly weak, but maybe it is stronger than I expected. Anyway, on to your second compliment.
I like that it's a straight up an 8x8 grid. It's just, hey, here is, you've got a chessboard probably somewhere in your household. There's a 10x10 grid for bigger games, but you're not going to move to those anytime soon. And it just, I like games that don't grids nowadays. I like the board gamey vibe of it. It's sort of like, here is just how it works. There are clear spaces. There's no, all right, your guys have a 1-inch reach, but they're 0.25 millimeters away. The 2.5 millimeters away, so they're not quite in range. The back rank can't attack me, but the front rank can. And this guy is just slightly out of the circle. Like, no, it's just the box he's in is next to the box you're in, so he punches you, and that's all there is to it. And it makes measuring all the abilities and stuff way faster. Like, if you've got a grid mat for some other game, just roll it out and go. Just get your sharpies out and destroy it up.
Yeah, 50 games into the podcast, I am sometimes getting nauseous when reading new terrain rules, because like, oh no, how is it going to treat going into the forest? And this game has very simple rules for all of that, and it might be on the gamier side of things, but it makes the game to be makes the game be on the faster side of things. And
it's a game. Like, having gamey rules makes perfect sense. Like, being beholden to the lore of your world, the reason that a storm bolter is better than a normal bolter is like, that's a bit silly, guys. Come on.
Well, the thing is, G-Dubs never felt beholden to the lore when it comes to game weapon balance. And this game is just like, this is the vehicle where for you to deliver necromancer fights using their skeletal proxies. You don't even know what weapons they're using aside of the fact that it's called like Shamble. What does Shamble do? Well, good luck finding out. For my second good point, I like the limited but clear customization in the game because it ties into army building being really easy. And then each unit has their potential upgrades written out underneath. They're always connected to what the unit does. It's not just a generic rule upgrade that you'd want to take on every unit and stuff.
It works. It works for a lot. It's such a great way to do it. Like, it's universal special rules, basically. And it's very clear. And everyone has access to, like, very similar traits. And they have a fun little spin on all of them. Like, everyone uses the same tokens. Everyone sort of, in certain ways, will deal with them all. Like, different levels of Doom, Berserk, Plague, Mutation per faction. But they all play around with them. Everyone wants to deal with corpse tokens. Everyone just works the same.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that the upgrades for the units are like special rules, but they are tied with how the factions.
They reinforce themes and how you want to be playing. So it's a great way to sort of see, all right, what am I Stitch Thralls want to be doing? Oh, I see they get better around simple mutations, so I must be wanting to do that more. And then which is good. Like,
yeah, for example, I'm looking now, like Gorgamox, the plague faction. You can upgrade the Thrall so that when it dies, it leaves hazard terrain instead of a corpse. Mm. Now, this denies the corpse faction corpses, but the hazard itself, for example, can work with Rotten, the Gorgamox Scion, which can get an upgrade to become curse-proof while standing in a hazard. So you send the Thrall forward, it dies, it leaves a hazard, and then the Scion steps onto that hazard to suddenly become immune to curses. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's very deliberate. It's designed with a clear goal in mind. It's not just go do whatever with tags. And limitation in army building, I feel, is good for every game.
Yeah, it's everything about it is so intentional and works so much better than you may expect for a simple short game. Like, I'd say enough good things about how it's written and how it's looked, and it's just sort of, and it just broadly demonstrates the chops of the designer to sort of make this in between Lancer and Icon, and it's just sort of like, damn, son, this is what you had in your back pocket this whole time. Wow, okay. And I'd love to see other RPG designers sort of come and like play in this space as well with this much intentionality. Like, I know the Fragged Empire guy has been talking about a miniature skirmish game for a while, and so like, please bring that over because that game is sick. I love the world. So yeah, like, this is a harbinger of more of this quality. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So moving on to that ultimate of our questions, would you play Malagast if you had to buy
minis for this printing out the paper?
Well, I already purchased it, and the module exists on Tabletop Simulator, so I could see myself playing it because it doesn't take too long to set up, and if someone wanted to do it, I'd play it.
I'm much more willing to play this in person, I think, because you get A4 sheet all the stats out, or just like make them into little cards easily enough, simple as. The unit cards are great, by the way. The unit cards are amazing. It's very clear and concise and tells you everything about the character stats you need. And it's like, it's a chessboard, if you keep saying. It's like 8x8 grid, so it's very transportable. And making double-sided paper standees out of little triangle shapes is incredibly easy. The barriers to play this game are like
as low as they have
inch high, like
yeah,
they're the kind that the heroine trips over running away from the monster in your favorite horror slasher film.
You don't even need the color print. Yeah. You don't even need a color printer. Just print out the standees and color in the one color that the has with
your
like
favorite
pencils
is that
or
crayon stuff. Like it right up the grids. It's so good. It's so interesting, and the example maps are fantastic. Like it's hard to think of reasons like not to play this game, short of not having an opponent. But like it's the kind of game that you could get your partner into or whoever you live with as well in a very easy way. It's like, hey guys, there's no painting models, there's no anything. Just give me like half an hour. Like just all I want, just half an hour instead of watching more, you know, The Bachelor tonight. Well, Bachelor's for tomorrow. Like just gonna check that one. As an intro to war games, it's great, but it's also terrible because nothing else will do this as well.
Yeah, you could use it as introductionary game at cons. It's, I guess, a simpler introduction because it's so structured. You don't have to bother by telling people like, oh, this is how we measure. You measure from the same spot on the base to the same spot on the base. It cuts down on the possibilities, so it makes it easier to explain. And at the end of the day, if you want to connect with your metalhead / goth child and maybe to attract them to the hobby, I think this could do it. It already has music provided.
Yeah, like in just thinking about like the other gate entryways is coming, like you could play it with your Lancer mates or anyone playing RPGs who's used to like grid based warfare. Like, hey, what if we try this instead? We haven't got enough players tonight. Everyone's balanced. There's two of us. Like, we could do something different. Play another game. It's definitely players. Definitely like, if Sean and Doug were like, that sounds cool, then let's fucking go.
And again, art, beautiful. So yeah, that was it for another easy breezy, fast and furious episode of.
Hey, well, the game's good. It's simple. Like it's just a short episode. Yeah, the game's like it's great. Look at the art. Do you want to play that game? Why the fuck not?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder what's the longest episode we've ever given to a good game? Because I'm sure we had some games where we were like. When you start talking about the game and you start realizing how ingenious
it
is.
Yeah, that's most of the episodes get longer when we're sort of like talking amongst ourselves, like, yeah, that's really good. Yeah, that's really good, brother. And sort of like, this game is fucking amazing. It's sort of like, yeah. Yes, it is. And that's the conversation. Or like the game is like kind of okay and there's not much to say about it, like Drowned Earth was. Which Drowned Earth is still like a really pretty game. A really cool setting, really cool board options. Just like, I don't like playing it. The main problem.
I think we probably nerded out on Pull Pally way back when.
Yeah.
Because like, hey, remember this mechanic? It's actually really cool. And remember this mechanic? It's also really cool. Ah, all the mechanics are good.
Had all this time unemployed. I haven't played anything near like I wanted to. Ah, well.
So, that's the end of this episode. Thanks to everyone for sticking with us. Thank you for the increasing crowd of the Patreon supporters. You guys are very cool and very good. And thank you for appearing and talking to us on the Discord. And yeah, for the rest of you, we appreciate your listen. I like to see that listen number go up in the back end, and we hope to bring you more smaller games worth an out in the future.
Yeah, thanks, gang. Thanks for listening. Thanks for interacting. Thanks for engaging with us in any ways. Just letting us do this, which is really cool.
Yep. Bye.